The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 335, recorded on December 9th, 2013. And welcome to the 335th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 168th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. As you can tell, Paul is not here since he's not doing the intro. He's gone for the week because of another crunch. So he's extremely busy this week, so I won't be able to make this week. But we still have Jordan here.
Hi, everybody.
Who apparently didn't have to wait too long to get a second next-gen console.
Yeah, my workplace every year does a big holiday giveaway thing. It's multiple days of prizes, and today I won an Xbox One. I wasn't even present to win, and I won an Xbox One.
Wait, how's that work?
Well, because I'm working from home because my right foot is broken and I'm in a cast, I wasn't able to be there. So somebody spun the big wheel in my stead, and I'm being sent an Xbox One.
Okay, so you don't actually have it with you yet.
I don't have it with me yet. I just wanted it 4:30 this afternoon.
You know, I think the main thing you can use with that is just run your cable through it so that you don't even have to, you know, you can just tell the Xbox what channels to choose for you.
Well, my cable box doesn't have an HDMI out, so that's a non-starter. So I don't know what you got.
Isn't it time you got one?
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Oh,
I
mean, wait, just, how backwards is your cable system that it don't have an HDMI in your box?
Well, it's a standard coax cable is what it is. It's, you know, like every other cable box.
But mine has an HDMI out.
Mine does not. So,
does it mean you have to upgrade your cable box?
I would have to upgrade my cable package is what I would have to do. And I don't know that I'm going to do that yet.
Okay. Well, at least you can have your Xbox turn on your TV for you because it recognizes cable and it recognizes the kind of TV you have. I am thinking about maybe getting a new TV because my Xbox One does not recognize the Kobe brand, whatever brand that is. So,
yeah.
I mean, I guess I could sit there waiting for it to cycle. Oh, did the TV mute? No. Did the TV mute? No. Because what it does, it runs through cycles of codes, right?
Yeah.
And eventually it'll find a code that actually does something to your TV. And I did not want to wait there for like a couple of hours as it went through each and every code. I can just imagine going through 1,000 codes.
I think Kobe uses the same codes as Emerson. Try the Emerson codes and see if those work.
Anyways. I might want to get a bigger TV anyway, one that has at least a 1080p. Because I ordered Moon now that I have a Blu-ray player in my Xbox One, so I'll finally be able to watch it. I mean, I could have gotten it digitally, but I'm still backwards when it comes to movies. I want my movies on disc, thank you.
Moon was a very good movie. I enjoyed Moon an awful lot.
Yeah.
I don't know that it needs to be seen in 1080p, but it's a very good movie.
So the other thing is, before we get into what we've been playing, as a matter of fact, we won't need to get into it that long because one of the news items is about something that you've been playing. But I just started playing Peggle 2, not 15 minutes ago, and one of the strange things is it costs $11.99. And when was the last time an Xbox 360 game did not cost something $5, $10, or $15, or $20?
Well, that's since they got rid of the Xbox Live points, they can do that now.
I mean, it would have been $9.60 if it was Microsoft points, but you know, interesting psychologically. I don't mind paying $12 for a game, but I feel funny about paying 1,200 Microsoft points for a game. You know, there's a sort of
1,200 Microsoft points is $8, right? It was $8.
$15. No, I'm sorry. 800 was a $10. So it was $15. I mean, it's not that much, but it still has that psychological break. I think Microsoft may have figured that out in that, you know, people see 1,600 Microsoft points, they blanch, even though it's $20.
Right.
You know, I mean, when you pay for something in regular old cash, you know, you're able to say, oh, well, it's just $10. I don't care. You know,
unless it's nice to not, it's nice to not be able to think about $10.
On the other hand, you know, unless it's DLC and you see $15 for a Call of Duty maps, and it's like, no.
Yeah, no. Horse armor. No, thank you.
Actually, what's funny is that Battlefield 4, with each successive pass, apparently has been getting worse on console.
Really?
As a matter of fact, Arthur Geese had to downgrade his score to Battlefield 4 now to 4 out of 10.
Wow.
So it's getting bad out there.
Hmm.
And the funny, you know, it's really funny. Battlefield 4, people are unhappy with. Call of Duty Ghosts, people are very unhappy with. Well, gee, what does that leave left? Oh, yes, that other game that's coming out in March. You know, it's just...
Killzone?
What?
Killzone?
Ew. No, Killzone's already out.
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know. But the thing is that I'm in on this first when I make the first prediction that EA deliberately tanked Battlefield 4 so that more people would be interested in Titanfall. You know that conspiracy theory is going to pop up. Yeah, they tanked Battlefield 4 so we'd want to get Titanfall.
Well, the Battlefield games and the Call of Duty games have been a downward slide over the last several games.
I don't know. People like Black Ops 2. But the thing is that, well, you know, also, I don't think Electronic Arts was able to get Activision to follow suit and have Call of Duty Ghosts be bland and boring, which is a disappointment because I really like the concept of that squad in which, you know, you build up your squad and other people play it for you, sort of like the shooter equivalent of having your car be memorized in Forza 5. And by the way, everything that we assumed would happen. There's a lot of crappy aggressive drivers out there. So we'll be tied you if you have a car, you have a race full of Jordans and you're the only one. No. Because you already said that you're a bad driver in these games, aren't you?
It's not that I'm a bad driver. It's just that I don't care about racing games. So,
oh no. Is that you just, to say, I'm going to ram into these computer cars and just push my way through.
Oh, well, in the Project Gotham games, that was how you did it. Because if you hit the wall, you would lose points. If you hit another car, you would not. So if your choice was to hit the wall or hit another car, you would hit the other car.
Oh, I see. Anyways, this week's gaming news is less about sales and all that stuff and more about games, actually, because we've been doing a lot of industry stuff, but we're going to be doing a few games right now. By the way, what's interesting to me is that with just a week's head start, the PlayStation 4 outsold the Xbox One 500,000 units, and when you take into account the price of both things, it's about equal. Really, when you think about income. So, okay, that's the one little sales stat we're going to give for the day. And now we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, Jordan.
All right. Game news. Square Enix confirms Tomb Raider Definitive Edition for next gen. Square Enix has confirmed that Tomb...
Not from Strategy Informer.
Oh, sorry. Let me try that again. Square Enix confirms Tomb Raider Definitive Edition for next gen. This comes to us from Strategy Informer. Square Enix has confirmed that Tomb Raider Definitive Edition is in development, and United Front and Nixes are helping Crystal Dynamics finish it. United Front is currently working on Sleeping Dogs Triad Wars. Gosh, doesn't that sound like the most generic title ever?
You know, actually, people like Sleeping Dogs, though.
I don't know. We've dealt with triads ever since Rise of the Triad. It's just...
Well, that's a minute. That's a different triad. Come on.
I guess.
There's no Yakuza involved here, okay?
Yeah, okay. United Front is working on the Xbox One version, while Nixus is working on the PlayStation 4 version and are working on bringing the games closer to the PC version. According to Nixus, the PlayStation 4 version will have the controller light glow red and orange when Lara lights a torch and will flash with gunshots when firing a weapon. On the other hand, the Xbox One version will have Kinect 2.0 functionality, letting the player change weapons and attachments and navigate menus with their voice while using hand gestures to rotate and inspect relics or to lean into the world to find viewpoints. Both versions will also utilize the latest tech in giving, for example, Lara more realistic hair. The next-gen versions will arrive on the 28th of January, 2014.
So, are you interested in... Oh, by the way, I was playing Peggle 2, and it does have Kinect functionality, but it's very subtle. And one of the things I like is that you could, if you only put up two fingers, right, you can move your hand around to move the nozzle, right, when you're playing Peggle 2. Mm-hmm. But if you hold up two fingers, it slows down the nozzle, you know, for the accurate shots. I mean, you could ever do that with the original Kinect, you know, just hold up two fingers or something like that, you know, with that kind of detail. So, have you played Tomb Raider?
I played the last version of Tomb Raider, the Lara trapped on the island.
Yeah.
It's borderline murder porn Tomb Raider. Yes.
What? Wait. Murder porn? Really?
Borderline murder porn.
How
basically,
so?
Yeah. Well, you have the cultists on the island who are killing everyone that they can get their hands on except Lara, in various horrible ways, and you have caverns full of bodies, and yeah, it's basically Tomb Raider murder porn. No, I enjoyed it a lot. I played it on the 360, I believe. Okay. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good way to reboot the Tomb Raider franchise and bring it back to where it should be instead of languishing somewhere in an IP cupboard.
And Lara doesn't have breasts the size of watermelons in the game.
And she does not appear to be top heavy.
No. Well, give her time. I mean, she's a college student. Hell, she's like 22.
It'll be the next game. Yeah, man.
Yeah. She finds the secret of silicone in the cavern.
She spends all of her gold buying breast implants between the next games.
Yeah. Well, at least they won't be square if that happens anyway. So
yeah.
I have not played Tomb Raider, actually.
It's quite good. It's it's survival horror ish. I mean, the horror is not supernatural. The horror is a bunch of cultists.
Yeah, well, that's what I know is that since there are very few people, those encounters become more intense because you have to sneak up on them, you have to avoid them or stuff like that. I mean, I did play some of the demo, not the actual demo. I mean, demo at E3, in which I was stalking a deer with a bow and arrow. So I got to enjoy that part of it. So
and there are bits where I don't know if you're a fan of the Sam Raimi movies where I'm blanking.
What are you going to have a wandering camera running around the thing?
Not a wandering camera, but where Bruce Campbell gets the crap kicked out of him on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, yeah. I know that. I also know that Lara is treated like a punching bag in this.
It's one thing after another with her. And,
But at least it isn't like she's made of iron. She actually does get hurt. So there are
consequences. She does get hurt and there are consequences. And the character model degrades through the game as she it has more and more damage inflicted upon her.
Well, you know what game is also like that? All the Batman Arkham games, too, if you notice. When Batman's playing those, his uniform gets ripped. He starts getting bruised. He starts getting a 5 o'clock shadow. That's the one thing I noticed immediately from the first Arkham Asylum. I was like, oh, cool. He's having to deal with this. It's sort of like Nightfall in that way.
Right. Well, and it's the opposite of a game like Uncharted where Nathan never tucks his fucking shirt in. Not once.
And he also shoots thousands and thousands of brown people, too. I might get Tomb Raider. Now, the thing is, I have to restart my Gamefly thing. I did. By the way, I am such a sucker. I bought a year's worth of Xbox Live, but the reason why I did it was I saw Best Buy had the day one cards.
Ah,
you know, and the thing is, the code is on something else, but it comes with this little neat silver thing on a what do you call it again? A mounting, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like something you can. It's really cool looking, you know. So I said, well, you know, it's better than paying $10 a month. I'll just get, and I only had to pay $50 too instead of the $60.
Nice.
So I'm pretty sure those cards are, you know, there's like 10 of them, so it's like. Maybe I'll get you one of those for your Christmas present now, so that at least you don't have to worry about paying for online for a year.
That's true, and it'll be easier to pay for live when I didn't have to pay for the hardware.
It also comes with a special demo version of Killer Instinct, which comes with a bonus character, right?
Because the regular demo version, you only can play as Jago, right?
Yeah, but this allows you to play with, I think, three people. I have to look at it again. But it's a special day one demo of Killer Instinct. And by the way, for a game that wasn't a very good fighter back in the day, the Killer Instinct has been getting raves for its gameplay and all that stuff. And the thing is that it only has six fighters in it, right? But since you have that few fighters, you're able to concentrate more on play balancing them, right? So, and you have those, you do have juggling combos, but it at least allows you to break out of them or break if someone's using them against you.
Gotcha.
And it's also supposed to be a very good looking game.
I've seen some videos, but you know, I was never impressed with the original Killer Instinct. It was all flash. It was no substance.
Well, in this case, they did add the substance. I mean, if it was going to be a launch game for a new console, it better.
Yeah.
Do you play fighting games?
Oh yeah, I play fighting games. I've been playing fighting games since. Oh gosh, forever.
The last fighting game I played was Soul Calibur.
Yeah,
like the latest
Soul Calibur 5.
I'm not sure if I played Soul Calibur 5 actually. My last one may have been Soul Calibur 4. Which 4 was the one with Yoda and Darth Vader, right?
Correct.
Okay, and that's the last one I played.
5 was the one that had Ezio from Assassin's Creed.
Right.
Or no, it was Connor from Assassin's Creed, sorry. Right.
So, yeah, we'll be getting into that later. Next news item. EA donates $1.65 million to the American Cancer Society following Humble Campaign. And this comes to us from CVG, which happens to be Computer Video Games. A total of $10.5 million was carved up between the 5 different charities in the wake of the Humble Bundle sale that included some of EA's biggest games, of which they kept none of the revenue. Peter Moore tweeted that he's so proud of the EA for Team EA for raising $10.5 million from the charity campaign, with $1.65 million of that going to American Cancer Society. The Humble Origin Bundle featured a total of 10 EA titles, and it broke the record for Humble Bundle, which was $5 million. The games included Dead Space, Dead Space 3, Medal of Honor, Burnout Paradise, The Ultimate Box, Crysis 2, Maximum Edition, and Mirror's Edge, and Battlefield 3 and The Sims 3 with an expansion were also offered, because I should know, because I did pay for the Humble Bundle. And I still haven't played Dead Space 3 yet, and I still haven't played Medal of Honor yet. I've been playing a little bit of Mirror's Edge, actually. And you know, the funny thing is, I immediately plugged in the controller, because I could not play Mirror's Edge with a keyboard and mouse at all. I'm like you.
Well, it's because keyboard and mouse is clearly an inferior control scheme for games.
For that particular game, it's a first-person platformer. I'm not going to do it. So, yeah. And the thing about that, the thing that really surprised me and a lot of people was that Dead Space 3 was included. And that was
right.
That's a relatively new game. That's still selling like $40, $50 on shelves still. And it's
right,
not a
right.
game either.
So do we know the other 4 charities that got money out of this? I mean, we know the
Human Rights Campaign, San Francisco AIDS Foundation, the American Red Cross, and GamesAid.
Nice.
So yeah, and I think it's really commendable that they didn't keep a penny for themselves.
No, that's fantastic, and that's exactly the way it should be.
Yeah. So you know, that's not exactly how the world's worst company should be behaving. I'm going to go again. You know, people out there, stop it. Just because they sell, you know, they sell buggy products or they overcharge for DLC does not make them the world's worst company.
Well, you know, part of it makes me wonder if they did this specifically so they would not get world's worst company this year.
Worst U.S. company anyway. Not
yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, which of those games have you played?
I played Dead Space.
I haven't played Dead Space in a while.
The original Dead Space on the Xbox 360.
Okay.
I think that's the only one. Well, and I did. I played
Paradise.
The
I reviewed.
I played. Oh, wow. I played the demo of Mirror's Edge.
Wait, you never played Mirror's Edge? The original.
I played the demo of it.
Just the demo?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, the demo has the best part. Is it, I think that just has the first level, right?
Exactly. Yes, and I've heard it's nothing but downhill from there. But I also heard in the patch the different DLC made it a much better game.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the entire thing about Mirror's Edge is it has the better version of Stay. I love Stay, Still Alive.
Mm.
And it's not.
Still Alive isn't in Mirror's Edge. Still Alive is in Portal.
No. This is a different Still Alive.
Ah.
Da, da, da. You know what you should do? Go to YouTube and do Still Alive Mirror's Edge. And by the way, you should know this because that's the background music to the iPad version of Mirror's Edge that you own. I know you own that.
I have the iPad version. I don't pay attention to the music.
The instrumental version of Still Alive.
Oh, okay.
And what's funny is that the Game Stooge Awards in 2007, the best the song that won best song was Still Alive from Portal, and the next year the song that won best song was Still Alive from Mirror's Edge. I am tempted to give best song this year to a game that's not even out yet, and that's the Mugenics theme song. I mean, that is
catchy. Just because a game doesn't a game isn't out, never stopped Spike TV.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, that song to Mugenix, that just makes me want to play the game right away. Although I will say this, you know, of all the games I've played so far, I'm going to say this: Peggle 2 may have the best music.
I've heard that not only very good music, but a very good surround mix,
and also,
which is strange from a game that doesn't really have any kind of three-dimensional motion or movement.
Well, Peggle is all about sight and sound to begin with.
Okay.
You know, I mean, what is the game really? It's pachinko. It's just a very fancy version of pachinko. And in order to distract people from the fact that you're playing pachinko, you have a lot of visuals and a lot of... And I will say this also, and this was said on Rebel FM as well, this is the happiest game you'll play all year, too. It's a game that makes you feel good. And when was the last time you could say that? I mean, all these games that are coming out are very dark and depressing. Assassin's Creed 4, Battlefield 4, Call of Duty Ghosts, you know, blah. Dead Rising 3, you know, everything is gloomy and goes, no, this is a game that's like upbeat and perky and makes you, you know, happy. So, anyway, I'm going on about Peggle 2, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
Anyways, we're going to move
on. You're going to have fun editing this, yes.
Moving on to the next item. I'm not going to edit that out. What are you talking about?
Report: MMOs targeted by intelligence agencies. This comes to us from The Guardian. According to the latest reports from The Guardian, from the Edward Snowden leaks, the NSA and the UK's GHG... Let me try that again. According to the latest reports from The Guardian, from the Edward Snowden leaks, the NSA and the UK's GCHQ have both committed to gaining footholds in virtual communities like World of Warcraft. At least that's what analysts said on their expenses when quizzed why they're in a 15-man raid in Azeroth. Documents have been published by The Guardian and other publications showing the intelligence communities are arguing MMOs are a quote-unquote hotbed of communication. The NSA document, written 2008, entitled Exploiting Terrorist Use of Games in Virtual Environments, stressed the risk of leaving games communities under-monitored, describing them as target-rich communications network where intelligence targets could hide in plain sight, wrote The Guardian. Games, the analyst wrote, are an opportunity. If properly exploited, games could produce vast amounts of intelligence, according to the NSA document. They could be used as a window for hacking attacks, to build pictures of people's social networks through buddy lists and interaction, to make approaches by undercover agents, and to obtain target identifiers such as profile photos, geolocation, and collection of communications, continued the report. Blizzard Entertainment has officially stated that they are unaware of any such surveillance going on in Azeroth. We are unaware of any surveillance taking place, said a spokesman. If it was, it would have been done without our knowledge or permission. Microsoft and Second Life founder Philip Rosedale had declined to comment on these documents, as has the NSA. GCHQ, however, said all their operations were lawful and with strict oversight.
Well, this reminds me of when they caught that crook who decided, after doing all those crimes, he's going to play some World of Warcraft. Remember that?
But there's a couple other pieces to this article that are missing. The first piece being that the leading rumor is that the head of Second Life actually pitched this idea to the NSA, that he was at the NSA giving them a conference talking about, hey, wouldn't it be great to be able to spy on foreign countries using Second Life without ever leaving the United States?
You know, I wonder if they just made this this report just so that they could play World of Warcraft on the government's dime.
From what I understand, it spreads beyond MMOs as well, in that they were also spying on Xbox Live and they were accessing Kinect metric data. It's a fairly large container of fish they're opening here.
Yeah, but you know what? The funny thing is, this guy was this criminal, and I forgot the story about it, but they I don't think it was the federal agency. I think it was a local police force. Used World of Warcraft the next time he logged on to find out where he was, and they just arrested him for doing it. And of course, you know what happens is that he was probably denied his ability to log on after that, which was probably the bigger punishment.
Yeah, that could very well be. And then also news broke locally here in Portland today that ATF agents set up a fake bogus head shop style storefront and were encouraging their customers to bring them and sell them guns and drugs. And when they would do that, they would bust them.
Well, here's something that might make you feel better. Back in 2009, the Los Angeles Police Department actually used World of Warcraft to give street gangs something else to do. I mean, rather than gangbang each other, they're going on raids.
That's not a bad idea. Sure.
You know, but
for the horde.
Here's the thing. How many terrorists do you know would actually find World of Warcraft useful?
Well, if you want to talk about using World of Warcraft as a communication channel, right?
Yeah, but even as that, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's possible, but let's be totally upfront and honest here. This program, which apparently started sometime in 2008, we don't know if it's still ongoing.
It's probably didn't. And especially Second Life, especially because that's just a barren wasteland.
Exactly. But this program, if it still exists, has netted zero arrests, zero terrorists, no evidence of any wrongdoing of any kind in any way, shape, or form.
But you see, the reason for that is something that's called signal to noise.
Yeah.
You know, there's way too much noise on this. That's why I laugh when people get worried about Kinect being able to spy on them. It's like, right. Well, what are you doing that anybody even cares about?
Well, and that's what I had to explain as a sysadmin, right? People would come to me and say, well, you can watch every web page that I go to. And I'm like, well, yes, technically, I have better things to do than watch every web page you're going to.
But I will say this, I can say this, you can turn off Kinect when you want to. I mean, when you're doing your Xbox One, you start getting nervous, you know, you can just have it turn off. Although,
it's no longer required that it be plugged in to start the machine, right?
No. But here's the thing is that what's really cool, and I can't do because no one else uses the Xbox One except for myself, is that I want to see what happens when you have three people in that house and it says, oh, who's that? Oh, hi. And every time they enter the room, it'll say, oh, hi. Hi, Alan.
Right, because that would require you to have friends, right?
Friends who actually visit me. All my friends are on my friends list. Thank you.
We'll experiment with that. And the other videos that I've seen were with pets. That it would recognize your dog and try to do something with your dog.
Well, that sounds disgusting now.
Yeah.
And we have to go back to that thing that we banned. Paul asked us not to talk about.
Yes. Yes.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Ubisoft polling on Assassin's Creed 5 and non-assassin pirate game. And this comes to us from IGN. Ubisoft is reportedly polling fans about the next Assassin's Creed game and also whether they'd be interested in a pirate game that has nothing to do with Assassin's Creed. Some of the questions asked include such options as playing as a new assassin in a different historical time period, more stealthy gameplay sequences, the possibility to influence the look and feel of a city through my progression in the game. Well, not my progression, but, you know, in general. The royal we there. More famous historical characters to meet, befriend, fight. More assassination missions. The ability to extend the gameplay ability to extend the game experience on my mobile or tablet. The possibility to seamlessly enter and explore more buildings and houses. Ubisoft acknowledged the poll and said it was de rigueur for them to make such fan inquiries. As in previous years, Ubisoft takes these surveys seriously to help us gauge which direction they'd like to see future Assassin's Creed games head. And you know how much we love reading Abstergo market analysis reports, stated the publisher. Now you've been playing Assassin's Creed 4, and you know
I just finished Assassin's Creed 4 yesterday.
I'm just going to say Abstergo equals Ubisoft in that game, doesn't it?
Abstergo is more or less Ubisoft. It's a French-Canadian video game developer exploring historical simulations with pirates.
And you can buy Revelations and what was the one with the from Vita again that was just ported?
Liberation.
Yeah, you can buy. They have a Revelations Liberation bundle in the game. And of course, Watch Dogs is a game that you can play that's in there as well. And the funny thing is that do you sense a cry for help from those people? Because it seems like all the employees are extremely unhappy at having to deal with this. It's like
the employees are fine. You're talking about the in-game employees.
Yeah, it's sort of like a cry for help from the actual developers.
It did seem a little bit put upon when you realize that, you know, you're working for the Templars, and the Templars are the bad guys. Well, but the
game is subtly setting up a third faction for the next.
It is. And I spent most of my time in game. I didn't really explore the Abstergo company headquarters until after I'd finished the game. And then I went and did all the little hacking missions and all of that stuff.
You know, the thing is that I was not going to buy Assassin's Creed 4. I was going to stay away from it, Plague, because Assassin's Creed, I haven't even finished that. I haven't even finished the first mission. Not the first mission, but the first area, you know, the first memory, you know?
Right.
And the thing is, I've seen gameplay clips, and there's a report that it's a lot like Sid Meier's Pirates, and I'm saying, okay, fine, I'll get it for the Xbox One. Jeez,
it's a very good game. It's very much worth playing. Yeah. And you know, the whole area around Cuba, which is fascinating, and then late in the game, you unlock part of Africa as well.
I just like the fact that you buy sea shanties.
Well, you don't buy them. You collect them.
You collect them, whatever. You know, so you have your guys singing a different tune every time you're in your ship.
Yes, and you can change the tune with the D-pad. Yes.
So, no, but I was also very impressed by the water graphics, you know, the graphics.
The water's fantastic. And the sea shanties are authentic as well.
Yeah, well, I would guess that. I mean, that's one thing about the Assassin's Creed games. They go do a lot of research. I mean, playing a game, if you want to, you just go through the those little biographies and discussions about, you know, the famous areas, you know, without even playing the game. You know, when you unlock... when it unlocks information for you to read, you know, all these historical facts and stuff, you could spend hours just reading those you know.
I found one glitch in the game, which was a tavern that was invisible. I'm having to collect everything and unlock everything. And this one tavern I could not find. I had to cheat and go online and figure out where it was because it did not show up on my map. But other than that, it's a fairly flawless game.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure there'll be DLC for it at some point.
There already is DLC, right? On the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, there's an extra mission with Aveline from Assassin's Creed Liberation, which is really kind of pointless and just, you know, you just run through
DLC
and kill everyone and you're done.
I mean, premium DLC, which you have to pay for.
Yeah, right. There is a Blackbeard DLC coming, and there is one with one of your master at arms on board the ship. Mm-hmm. Is a rescued slave, and there will be a DLC featuring him. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with it.
Isn't directed by Quentin Tarantino or something?
I think it'll be more 12 Years a Slave than Django Unchained.
Does Assassin's Creed 4 then seem sort of like one of those stealth spinoffs? You know, like when Golden Girls had one episode called Empty Nests. And well, it was like just tangentially about, they only appeared for 2 seconds and it was all about these people. And so, you know, it's a pilot for something that's not, you know, it's not an actual pilot. It's just a stealth pilot to gauge interest. Do you think that's is?
To a certain extent, yes, because the main character is not an assassin, right?
He doesn't give a shit. He just wants money.
He's not in it for the assassins. He's not in it for the Templars. He killed this guy and took his assassin suit, and so now he has all the abilities of an assassin, but he's really just. I think it was the guy on Zero Punctuation called him a talented amateur, right? So you know, you interact with the Assassin Order and the Templar Order, but you're neither order. Which is interesting, considering, you know, the in-game mythology is that this is being developed by Abstergo Entertainment, and so they want to rewrite history so that the assassins look bad and the Templars look good, and it doesn't turn out that way. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I mean, that's the way it was in Assassin's Creed Liberation, right? It was all done by Abstergo. It was powered by Abstergo. And so you kept hearing about how awful these assassins are. Whereas a hacker kept intruding in the game to go, actually, you might want to replay that because that's not how things went.
So let me ask you a question then. How much does Assassin's Creed 4 make you really interested in Assassin's Creed 5?
I need to know more about Assassin's Creed 5. I can't really say one way or the other. I judge the games on a title-by-title basis. But, and right now we know nothing about 5.
What I'm asking is, how much does it intrigue you that you want to, you know...
I will, whatever the next game is, I will take a look at it and I'm interested to see where it goes. the whole Desmond story is dead. Kind of put to bed at this time. So,
but they still talk about him in Assassin's Creed 4, though.
They still talk about him, and you know, you get to see his autopsy in Assassin's Creed 4, and you know, they have his brain in a jar somewhere, and so that's how they're still accessing all of these memories. They still have Desmond's DNA, but I don't know where they're planning on going from here.
Well,
there was an Abstergo document in game where they talk about different potential assassins and why they choose one over another one and so on and so forth, which was interesting from a marketing perspective since I work in marketing now.
All I remember is Minerva talking to Desmond through Ezio, right?
Yes.
And they never really went anywhere with that. And I, you know, it's like...
Well, and well, I probably shouldn't spoil it because I don't know how far you are in the game. But
I haven't even started the game.
Minerva pops up in four as well, but yeah.
But at least there's that. I mean, I just didn't want that little plot thread to go nowhere. It's like, oh, here's an interesting, but it's just a mind screw, and we're gonna forget about it. You know?
Yeah.
Anyways, we're gonna move on go on.
If you find yourself looking for a tavern that isn't there, let me know. I will tell you.
I'm not as much of a completionist as you, although, you know, the only way to make me complete something is to give me something that's a reward. And also right. Make it easier to get.
Right.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next... Oh, sorry. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. That's you.
Oh, is this me?
Yes, that's you.
I talked so much I forgot it was me. Report, Disney taking over Indiana Jones from Paramount. This comes to us from Deadline. Not content with producing Star Wars films, Walt Disney Studio and Paramount Pictures have struck an agreement to sign a marketing and distribution deal with the other major LucasArts franchise, Indiana Jones. Paramount will retain the distribution rights for the first four Indiana Jones films and will get a cut on future indie films, but Disney will be handling everything else, which includes video game adaptations. The first Disney-produced Star Wars film will hit in late 2015.
So, does this make you nervous or does it make you happy?
The bit that makes me nervous is Disney now owns Indiana Jones, Star Wars,
Marvel,
The Muppets... And
you can have a nice little mega crossover there.
And you know, imagine like a Super Smash Brothers game with all of the Disney properties. Kermit versus Darth Vader.
but he already did that, except he's Yoda.
I was going to say Kermit versus Darth Vader.
You know, the Muppets actually include Sesame Street, don't they? So you could have Big Bird, too.
The Muppets include Sesame Street, I believe. So, yeah, it's huge. The only thing left
against Indiana Jones.
The only thing left for Disney to do is to buy Hasbro Toys, and then that would pick them up the G.I. Joe and Transformers license, and they basically have all the money in the world.
Doesn't Hasbro also own Lego?
No, Lego is its own entity, but Hasbro does own Nerf. So they would have Nerf and Transformers and G.I. Joe, which, yeah.
You know, the thing is that the Lego movie is coming out in February. It's the first I ever heard of this, and I didn't know it until there was a video game adaptation.
And yes, the trailers are hilarious.
And the thing is, it actually works. And a video game adaptation of that would actually work because they've already done a ton of that style of Lego game, you know.
Yes.
So.
And they're going to have Wonder Woman as a Lego minifig in a movie before there's actually a Wonder Woman in a movie, which I find hilarious. But I'm looking forward to it.
You know, at some point, you're just going to have to drop Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones.
They'll have to do something. They'll have to recast the role, or you know, they kind of set it up in the last movie to pass it over to Shia LaBeouf.
No, that's not happening.
Yeah.
That's not happening. I think there will be a reboot before that happens. And the question is, if they do a reboot, will it be in World War II or will they modernize it?
I think if they were to reboot it, they would have to do it in World War II. I mean, that's part and parcel of the Indiana Jones mythos is Indy versus the Nazis. So.
Well, I don't know. Well, not counting Indy versus the communists in the last movie, but
yeah.
You know, and getting back to the Star Wars Disney film, the thing is that seeing, you know, I don't think J.J. Abrams was made to do Star Trek, to tell you the truth.
I think Star Wars is a better fit for him, yes.
Yeah. I just, you know, I it'll be interesting because, you know, J.J. Abrams professes to be a big Star Trek fan, right? But he completely botched it. And that reminds me, Bryan Singer was a big Superman fan, and he completely botched that.
Well, from what I recall is that he actually did not know anything about Star Trek, that and he intentionally kept himself ignorant of Star Trek.
Oh wait, no, who was the guy? Oh, no, I'm sorry, it was the other guy who directed Star Trek Nemesis, Stuart Baird.
Damon Lindelof?
No, Damon Baird. Come on,
oh,
Stuart
okay.
Baird. I'm sorry. And he co-wrote it and he had help with Brent Spiner actually on the script. Sort of explains why they off Data in that. Of course, Data, you know, Brent Spiner is aging. Data's not supposed to be able to age.
Right. They could only do it so long.
Yeah. So anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. And this comes to us from Alpha Shard. Hearing about drones delivering packages, I have to agree that they will be abused and people will attempt to steal and break them. I'm sure paranoid people will think they're being used to track everyone, like Jordan. On the continuing discussion of boss battles, I agree with Paul that just because there is a lot of bad implementations of it doesn't make it a bad concept area. I think Jade Empire, Jade Empire was a very narrative game and had just fine boss battles. I do agree there are some games that don't need them or have them in a way that doesn't make sense. I was watching a PS4 game about zombies, and the hero went through hordes of zombies with ease until he came up against some human bikers. I think he's a little bit confused here.
I'm pretty sure that's an Xbox One game, yes.
Yeah, I watched as he drove a car through several of the bikers causing explosions, and the bikers just continued to somehow survive. Then an invisible timer ran on the boss. A boss biker suddenly appeared. That's Dead Rising 1. That's an Xbox One game. And that's the first actual boss. There's other boss battles that are optional. That's one mandatory boss battle. And, the boss biker rode a huge bike that spewed fire forth and had grinding blades in front of it. Yeah, that's definitely Dead Rising 3. Otherwise, the bike was unarmored and the hero was free to pump several rounds of blood-splattering shots into the guy. Actually, you have to throw Molotov cocktails at him, slowly lowering the large life meter. A boss battle like that is slag and not fun. That's the one I was complaining about in the podcast. I do have to say that was also my favorite part of Fable 2 was indeed just being able to kill the final guy and interrupting his evil overlord speech. One bullet, boom, he's dead. And if you don't do it, Reaver does it for you. The Quest for Glory series was good at having multiple paths to victory depending on what character build you went with. Yeah, that was my other complaint in which, you could actually build a quote-unquote wrong build and just be stuck because your character couldn't deal with whatever challenges were ahead.
Right.
Question of the week. Grand Theft Auto also has a companion, the iFruit. It was nothing more than a glorified Tamagotchi game only for feeding your dog so you could have better snooping skills. I didn't find it necessary to do this app, thankfully. Okay. And this is you, Jordan.
From Powell Predke. Hey, guys. I had to take a break from posting comments with all the new gen stuff going around. It's great to have Paul back. And, of course, we immediately lose him again. Welcome. Please come back, Paul. Please come back. His sarcasm and no bullshit approach to the news items and his podcasters add a lot to the show. Let me add my two cents to the boss battle discussion. In the past, I usually didn't have a problem with them, but the more I play, the more I dread the inevitable final boss battle in some of the games. I hated the final battle in Killzone Mercenary. Ultimately, I wasn't able to complete all the contacts on the highest difficulty settings, and I simply gave up.
You actually played this on the Vita, didn't you?
I have that on the Vita, yes. I don't like Killzone Mercenary at all, simply because it's too long to get into.
Well, the
I don't
graphics like are good, aren't Mercenary.
The graphics are beautiful. It's a great looking game, but you instead of getting equipment from people you kill, you get money, and then you have to go to a particular location on the map to spend the money to buy ammunition and weapon upgrades. You don't just get them organically off the people you kill, which just seems wrong to me. On the other hand, in games such as Resogun and Super Stardust, the boss fights add a lot to the titles. It's a lot like Paul said, there's nothing wrong with the boss battles intrinsically, but sometimes the implementation blows.
Well, those games are not narrative games. They're
right,
like Asteroids.
Right.
By the way, yeah. Have you played Resogun?
No, I played a demo of it at PAX, yes.
Oh, okay. So how's the demo?
Well, the demo is fine. It's basically a cross between Super Stardust and Defender. It's basically a 21st century version of Defender.
Well, you're basically saying the Sony's attempt to bring something like Geometry Wars to the PS4.
Well, Geometry Wars they already did with Super Stardust. Super Stardust is basically Geometry Wars.
By the way, where's Geometry Wars for the Xbox One?
That's a good question.
They should have one. I mean, I guess Peggle 2 will tide me over, though.
Let's see. As far as the question of the week goes, my smartphone is not so smart anymore, and most of the companion apps won't work on it. My only second screen experience so far has been the PS Vita remote play with the PS4, and I really enjoy it, although it's not really second screen. It also has the functionality, but there's nothing to use it with at this point. The Vita is similar to the Wii U in that your second screen is also a controller, so it should work as a gaming companion, and I can see myself using it in the future. I know that Knack has a companion app that is a Bejeweled-styled game. That the one thing I don't really get is why they don't release those same apps on the Vita. That's a very good question. By the way, since Jordan is enjoying Tearaway so much, maybe he'll also enjoy my blog post. Link, shameless plug.
For the win. Yeah, I'll post the link in the show notes on gamingpodcast.net. So if you want to see the link, go to gamingpodcast.net, episode 335. So while Jordan is looking, is playing into that link there. So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy our feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast.net or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestudios.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. And,
iTunes comments.
And also look for Paul's new game, Team USA's Pinsanity, which is on Facebook. So he's not here, but I might as well plug his Facebook game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, it's a short podcast, and basically because I didn't account for the loss of a third member, and I don't think necessarily it's Paul that brings people, although he does bring people. I think it's just the fact you have three people talking that makes it fuller. I tried to get Dan on tonight, but he wasn't available. So
understood.
Yeah, so it's just us two, and hopefully there'll be three of us next week, though.
Hopefully that will be great.
Yeah. So. Jordan, let us all know when you crack open your Xbox One.
I will let you know when I crack open the Xbox One.
I also want to hear about it. What's it called? Saying hi every time a new family member pops into the room. I like it when it does me, but it's kind of boring for it to always recognize me.
I'm excited to see what happens when the cats get in front of the camera.
Oh, no, the cats don't do it. My cats didn't pay attention to my cats. I guess it has to be a really big dog.
Gotcha.
The thing is that one. I did my gamer pick because what happens is you create your avatar, right? And now you can have them in a pose, and you snap that pose. And when I walk in, it has me, with both arms raised, celebrating every time I walk into the room, or at least my avatar, So
interesting.
Yeah. So, and whenever it's funny. Some games actually acknowledge you again. So there is that recognition.
Gotcha.
Anyways, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm fine. I'll know more once it shows up.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening in, and see you next week.
Good night, everybody.